It's going to be a short series, but we're calling it Between a Rock and a Hard Place. And I can really identify this. Today, I'm going to start out with one of my favorite all-time characters in the Bible, and that is Moses. And we want to start out with the story of Moses and what to do when you find yourself between a rock and a hard place.
Moses went to the mountain, and God spoke unto him.
Moses, this is the Lord thy God commanding you to obey my law. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you, I hear you. A deaf man could hear you.
What?
Nothing, Adonis, forget it. Oh Lord, why have you chosen me? What would you have me do for you?
I shall give you my laws, and you shall take them unto the people.
Yes, Lord! Lord, I shall give these laws unto thy people. Hear me! Oh, hear me! All pay heed! The Lord Jehovah, has given unto you these 15... Ten commandments for all to obey.
Well, maybe it won't be quite that subject. But I do want to talk about Moses today. And what to do when you find yourself between a rock and a hard spot like he did when he ended up between Pharaoh and the Red Sea. You know, over 200 years ago, a group of men found themselves between a rock and a hard spot. So they made a decision, and they signed a declaration that is still impacting our lives today. And we just celebrated that event a couple of weeks ago. Have you ever wondered what happened to the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence? Each one, in his own way, paid a price for their courage. Two became president. That could have been a fate worse than death. But five were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost sons in the Revolutionary Army. 2 others had sons who were captured. And 9 of the 56 died from wounds or hardships resulting from that war. When John Morton of Pennsylvania signed the declaration, his friends and his neighbors and his relatives all turned against him. And that ostracism hastened his death, and he died 8 months later. Thomas Nelson, who in the Battle of Yorktown noted that his very own home had been taken over as headquarters for the British Army. And seeing that the revolutionary forces were directing fire away from his house in deference to him, he quietly went to General Washington and said, "Fire on my home." And they did. And he watched it be destroyed. Now, all of these men were men of means and education, and many were men of status and station. They had it made in life. But when they found themselves between a rock and a hard spot, they had the courage to take a stand. Well, over 3,000 years ago, another man found himself between a rock and a hard spot, and he made his own Declaration of Independence. When he went before the king of Egypt and demanded, "Let my people go." His name is Moses. Now, what do you do when you find yourself between a rock and a hard spot? How do you make it through those difficult situations? It might be a personal thing. It might be relational. It might be financial. Being between a rock and a hard spot are those times when you wonder, am I going to make it through this? Am I going to survive this? It's when you're trying to balance a checkbook that's barely hanging on by its fingernails. That's being between a rock and a hard spot. It's being surrounded by your kids all summer long with no relief. Or being at camp with a group of kids. That is between a rock and a hard spot. It's any of those times in life, and we all face them from time to time, when we're asking ourselves, are we going to make it through this? Are we going to be able to keep the house? What are we going to do about one of our kids? How are we going to make it financially? What are we going to do about our aging parents? How are we going to take care of them? Should I follow the crowd or make a moral stand and risk being ostracized? When you're between a rock and a hard spot, you feel stuck. You don't know if you're going to get through it or not. You don't know which way to turn. You feel like you're up a creek without a paddle. When life gets that way, we have three basic options from which to choose. One, you can try to escape. And that is a very popular choice. You know, when things get tough, I'm out of here. I'm gone. We try to go backwards. We try to go back to the good old days. You ever try to do that? The only problem is the good old days were never really that good, were they? We have just fantasized them and romanticized them. Many people try denial. There's no real problem here. It's not that big a deal. Well, the problem with denial is that leaves you stuck right where you are, and you never make any progress. Pretending there is no problem makes it impossible to solve the problem. Doesn't work very well. Or you can work to find a solution. You can actually face your difficulties and press forward towards a solution. Now, what are you going to do when life starts squeezing in on you? God wants to take us through our difficulties, not around them, because that's what causes us to grow, and that's what makes our faith stronger. That is really what causes the change, changes our lives for the better. A thing I like about Moses, and the reason he's one of my heroes in the Bible, is that he was a man just like us. And when life started to really squeeze him, he found the strength to make it through. And I want to read part of his story this morning in Exodus 14. I want to read verses 1 through 12. I'll be reading from the New Living Translation. If you have your Bibles, open them to Exodus 14, and we'll be kind of scrambling through some of the first 14 chapters there. Exodus 14:1. Then the Lord gave these instructions to Moses. Tell the people to march toward Phi-Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea. Camp there along the shore opposite Baal Zephon. Then Pharaoh will think those Israelites are confused. They're trapped between the wilderness and the sea. And once again I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he will chase after you. I have planned this so I will receive great glory at the expense of Pharaoh and his armies. After this, the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites camped where they were told. When word reached the king of Egypt that the Israelites were not planning to return to Egypt after 3 days, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds. What have we done letting all these slaves get away, they asked. So Pharaoh called out his troops and led the chase in his chariot. He took with him 600 of Egypt's best chariots, along with the rest of the chariots of Egypt, each with a commander. The Lord continued to strengthen Pharaoh's resolve, and he chased after the people of Israel who had escaped so defiantly. All the forces in Pharaoh's army, all his horses, chariots, and charioteers were used in the chase. The Egyptians caught up with the people of Israel, and they were camped beside the shore near Pi-Hahiroth, across from Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh and his army approached, the people of Israel could see them in the distance, marching toward them. The people began to panic, and they cried out to the Lord for help. Then they turned against Moses and complained. Why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness? Weren't there enough graves for us in Egypt? Why did you make us leave? Didn't we tell you to leave us alone while we were still in Egypt? Our Egyptian slavery was far better than dying out here in the wilderness. Moses is between a rock and a couple of hard spots. He's got the Red Sea on one side, the Egyptians pressing down on him on the other hand, and all these people in his face, 2 million of them, screaming and complaining and blaming him for their problem. I love the book of Exodus. It is about experiencing a way out. In fact, the name Moses means to draw out. And it's a literal picture of his life as an infant being drawn out of the Nile River by the princess of Egypt. It's also a picture of Moses being drawn out of himself and being made into a great leader. And it's a picture also of the way God uses him to draw the nation of Israel out of Egypt and the oppression and the suffering that they experienced there. Exodus is a book about experiencing God's deliverance from the squeeze of rocks and hard places. And it illustrates what it takes to make it through those difficult times in life when they threaten to squeeze the life out of us. Now, we're going to look today at something you need to know, something you need to face, and something you need to do. When you find yourself between a rock and a hard place, you must first of all trust that God is on your side. However tough it gets, however squeezed in you feel, God really is on your side, even if he is the one squeezing you. Now, how did Moses get sandwiched between Pharaoh and the Red Sea? Exodus 14:2, tell the people to march toward Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. Camp there along the shore opposite Baal Zephon. Then Pharaoh will think those Israelites are confused. They're trapped between the wilderness and the sea. How did he get into this pickle? Underline the first three words. Tell the people. Who's speaking? God is. God told them to go there. God led them into this tight spot. Why? Well, because he knew that if he took them the easier route, they'd get into a war they couldn't win. He knew that this Egyptian army was going to come after them no matter what. So he put them in a place where he could show them who he was and what he could do. He could defeat the Egyptian army, and he could prepare them for future hard spots all at the same time. He was multitasking on the shores of the Red Sea. Another favorite verse of mine is Jeremiah 29:11, and you need to know the context of this, because this is where God sends Jeremiah to the nation Israel and says, you guys, you blew it again. You've been disobedient. You haven't observed anything that I told you to do. And so I'm going to put you between a rock and a hard spot to discipline you. The Babylonians are coming, and they are going to ransack your country and take you off captive. But he says, when you're there, I know the plans I have for you. They are plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. Circle, prosper you and hope and future. That's what God intends for you. It may get tough. He may be the one tightening the screws on you. But he's not going to destroy you. That is not his intention. In 1966, I joined the Marine Corps. Great timing. Vietnam War was escalating. I was a two-year guy. I had received draft papers, but I didn't want to be in the Army. I went with the Marine Corps. While I was in boot camp, I met three of the sweetest gentlemen. Now, these DIs that were in charge of us were the nastiest, meanest, most foul people I had ever met. I didn't know people like that existed. Every morning before dawn, as soon as Reveille even made a hint of going off, they crashed in the doors and screamed and yelled and banged things at us and cussed us out and just about scared us to death. They ran us until we were wringing wet with sweat. I mean, I thought I was going to die. And literally, one of the main things that helped me get through it was every day almost, I would remind myself, no, they don't want to kill me. They are not going to kill me. They need me. The Vietnamese are going to kill me. That's who they want to kill me. They are training me so I can survive when things really get ugly. And in that faith, With that hope, I endured boot camp. Serious. See, that's the gist of Romans 8:28. God is working on our behalf even in the difficulties of life. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and who are called according to His purpose. To those who love Him, to those who have surrendered their lives to Him, He promises to use everything to work out the goodness of His plan. He doesn't mean there that everything that happens is good. But God in His greatness can use even bad things, even the hard things, to make good things happen in our lives. Trust that God is on your side. And secondly, then face your difficulties. Difficulties come in many shapes and sizes. It could be outright trouble. Could be things that you fear, that maybe scare you to death. Could be relationships. Could be increased responsibilities. Could be just about anything. And Moses' life is rich with examples of how to get through these things. Back up in Exodus to chapter 2, you talk about difficulties. Moses was born between a rock and a hard spot. His life started during a time when all male infants born to Israelite families, to the Hebrews, were to be killed at birth. The midwives were given instructions, if it's a boy, kill it. His life was spared by the midwives, though. But when his mother could no longer hide him, she made a watertight basket and then set him adrift into the Nile River at just the right time and place so Pharaoh's daughter could find him when she went down to the river and bathe. His sister was instructed to watch. Be nearby and watch. And when the Pharaoh's daughter found the baby and pulled him out of the water, she goes up and volunteers to find a Hebrew woman who could wet nurse him until he's old enough to be taken to the palace where he will be raised in the lap of luxury as an Egyptian prince. Well, he grows to adulthood. When he's a young man, he evidently knows his Hebrew background and his roots. And he heads out one day to see what's going on with his fellow Hebrews, and he sees an Egyptian beating on an Israelite, beating him up. And so in the process of delivering him, remember Moses is the deliverer, he kills the Egyptian. Well, the next day, he's out walking around, checking things out again, and he sees two Hebrews fighting. And when he tries to break up the fight, their response exposes another rock and a hard spot that he's gotten into. Verse 13 of chapter 2. The next day when Moses went out to visit his people again, he saw two Hebrew men fighting. "Why are you beating up your friend?" Moses said to the one who started a fight. "Who do you think you are?" the man replied. "Who appointed you to be our prince and judge? Are you going to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" Then Moses was afraid, thinking, "Everybody knows what I did." And just as he feared, his worst fear came to pass. Pharaoh found out about the murder and comes after him. So he runs for his life out into the wilderness of Midian and settles into an unstressed life of a sheep herder. Not a bad deal. But then God breaks the silence. He always tends to do that. I see that pattern in Scripture. Exodus 3, verse 7 through 10. Then the Lord told him, "I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. I'm aware of their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. The cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Egyptians abuse them." Good news! Help is on the way for Israel. Till you get to verse 10. "Now go, I'm sending you." I'm sending you to Pharaoh. "You must lead my people out of Egypt." Try to put yourself in his position. He's a sheep herder. He likes being a sheep herder. It's quiet. It's tranquil. There's no stress. And all of a sudden, you're in charge. Go take on the Pharaoh himself and bring all these people back here. I choose you. Talk about being between a rock and a hard spot. Think like Moses. Feel like Moses must have felt. The things, the difficulties that he struggles with in all of this. Inferiority has to loom huge. In 3:11, Moses protested to God, "Who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people out of Israel, out of Egypt?" See, he's not up to the task. He's not a leader. He's okay leading sheep, but not a nation. I didn't sign on for that. He's also dealing with his own inexperience. Verse 13, Moses protested, "If I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they're going to ask me, what's his name? Then what am I going to tell them? I don't know any of this stuff. I don't know enough. Besides, they don't get it and they never will." He's also feeling very ill-prepared for the task. 4:1, Moses protested again. "What if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say, the Lord never appeared to you? I have no gravitas. I am not presidential. Send Charlton Heston. He's got the look and the voice. Don't send me. I'm Mel Brooks. I'm inexperienced. Nobody's going to follow me." He also feels very substandard. Verse 10, Moses pleaded with the Lord, "Oh Lord, I'm not very good with words, never have been, and I'm not now, even though you've spoken to me. You know, my speech hasn't improved since you started this conversation. It hadn't gotten any better. I get tongue-tied and my words get tangled. I'm not good enough. I don't have what it takes." And of course, he's plagued by outright fear. Verse 13, but Moses again pleaded, "Lord, please send anyone else." He's afraid to step into a situation that's way bigger than him and has an uncertain outcome. By the way, he's about 80 years old when this conversation happens. I want you to notice something here. These are not ill-founded concerns. He ran into opposition with everyone with whom he dealt, except his sheep. Remember, he asked God, "Who am I to appear before Pharaoh?" Well, everyone else was asking that question too. Remember 2:14? "Who do you think you are? Who died and left you in charge?" When he gets to the Pharaoh and he starts making trouble, making those demands, 5:4, "Who do you think you are?" Pharaoh shouted, distracting the people from their work. You know, when he initially went to the nation and called the leaders' meeting, it started out okay. There was a glimmer of hope. The leaders were soon convinced that the Lord had sent Moses and Aaron. When they realized that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshiped. Well, so far so good. But it didn't take very long to unravel all of that, and everything he feared in the very beginning became a reality. He goes to the Pharaoh. He makes his demands. Pharaoh says, "You know what? These people have way too much time on their hands. We're going to require the same output, the same number of bricks, but we're not going to provide them with the raw materials. They're going to have to go get that themselves. They got so much time on their hands to be whining and complaining and wanting to go off and have this worship service. Let them deal with this." So they do, and the Egyptians really turn up the heat. And so in 5:21, the foreman, a Hebrew, said to Moses and Aaron, "May the Lord judge and punish you for getting us into this terrible situation with Pharaoh and his officials. You have given them an excuse to kill us. This is your fault. If you'd have just left us alone, it would have been fine." Well, these are just a few of the difficulties and the fears that Moses faced. But you see, that's the key. He faced them. He didn't run away from them. He faced them head on. But he also, 3, moved forward by faith. He went against every fiber of his being and pressed on by faith, no matter how uncomfortable he was, no matter how scared he was, no matter how in deep over his head he was. He didn't try to go back to sheep herding. He became the shepherd of Israel. He didn't embrace a fantasy faith, pretending that it wasn't all that bad. The threats weren't all that bad. After all, God always saves his people just in the nick of time, like in the movies, doesn't he? He didn't do any of those things. He knew the threats were genuine, and he took his complaints to God and was real about his struggles, his doubts, and his fears. Look at 5:22 and 23. Then Moses went back to the Lord and protested. Can you imagine the audacity to complain to God? Why have you brought all this trouble on your own people? Why did you send me? Ever since I gave Pharaoh your message, it's been even more brutal to your people. And you haven't even begun to rescue them. You haven't lifted a finger to help yet. What's up with that? You see, that's real faith, not fantasy faith. Being real about your doubts and your misgivings. He's not sugarcoating anything. He's between a rock and a hard place and being ground to a pulp, and he lets God know the truth about what's going on in his life. That is real faith. He continues in 6:12, my own people won't even listen to me anymore. Where are we? How can I expect Pharaoh to listen? I'm no orator. But you see, in spite of all that, he hung in there. He pressed on. He kept moving by faith in obedience to God. He continued to face his difficulties and his fear. And step by step, one day at a time, he saw it through the end. Now the result is that the Moses that you see at the end of Exodus is a much better and stronger man than the one that we're introduced to in the beginning of the book of Exodus. And it only took him about 80 years to get there. So there's hope. Now, an interesting exchange occurs on the shores of the Red Sea. Pharaoh's army is on one side of them. The Red Sea is on the other. They're stuck in the middle here. First, the people speak in 14:11. In their usual whiny way, by the way. Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? You see, they wanted to exercise the first option we talked about a minute ago. They wanted to escape, to go back to where they were before as if nothing had happened, nothing had changed. They wanted to go back to the good old days. I guess they had forgotten how all this started in the first place. Remember, God had heard their cries for help in chapter 2 and seen their distress and had come down to rescue them. Well, after they get done complaining and whining, Moses weighs in, sounding unusually spiritual and confident. Whoa, what was that? Well, you're going to have to wait and... Are we there again? No? All right, 10 commandments, not 15. Can you hear me now? Are we good? Okay. Moses weighs in, and I think he's unusually spiritual and confident here. He says in verse 13, don't be afraid. Just stand where you are and watch the Lord rescue you. Wow, that's a switch. But God, I think incredulously, says, why are you crying out to me? Tell the people to get moving. Don't tell them to just stand there and watch. What am I doing? Okay.